Hi, everybody. This is Tracy. Today I've got a great topic, narcissistic siblings. Do you think that you have a narcissistic sibling? Or maybe you're just confused why your family was different than all the other families in town. I was confused as to why some siblings become people pleasers and others become narcissistic. Today, my special guest is Chris Godinez from the host of the weekly show, We Need to Talk. It's on YouTube. It's on Facebook. She's got a great Facebook group that you can reach out to. And she's the author of What's Wrong with Your Dad? Boy, I wish I had that one when I was growing up. She also has another book that is You Can Lead a Horse to Water, but You Can't Make Them Cha-Cha-Cha, Why Some People Stay in Abusive Relationships and Others Don't. That book is a really good example of case studies. She's giving you a case study of different things. I highly recommend it. But let's get back to starting this video, because today we're going to talk about the triangulation that pits siblings against each other. And when that happens, it creates a division, hatred, tension, anger, resentment, and most of all, competition. Competition usually for the parent, narcissistic or abusive parent, for their love to be that golden child. We're going to talk about the roles that we take on when we are in this type of family situation. And we're going to close out with the courage that it takes to set boundaries and break free from the drama. Just because they're our sibling doesn't mean we have to keep them in our life. If you wouldn't keep these people in your life, if they were your friends, we don't have an obligation to keep them in our life now. So let's welcome Chris and get started with this. I am so excited. Welcome, Chris. Thank you so much for joining me.
You are so welcome. Thank you for asking me.
You are a rock star and a very kind and loving person. And I know that my audience, so I'm sure already knows about you, will love talking with you today.
Cool.
We've decided to talk about siblings today. And a narcissistic sibling is something that we're stuck with. It's not like a relationship where you can necessarily never see them again. We have to manage that down. And I know that siblings have roles. So in my house, we had the golden child, middle, ignored child, and the scapegoat was my sister. But each one of us perceived the other as the golden child. How does that work?
Well, so what it is that the parents who are dysfunctional themselves in some way, shape, or form, they are either disordered themselves with a personality disorder or there's some other mental health issue going on. What they do is they play both ends against the middle. And so to the target of abuse, they will say, you know, you're bad, you're wrong, you're bad, you're wrong. But then they'll go to the other siblings and go, oh, why can't you be more like Harry? Or why can't you be more like Sally? Or why can't you be more? So now they're doing the triangulation thing. So remember, the triangulation is a game of telephone. So the abuser is the operator, and then you've got the two other siblings or three other siblings down here in the other part of the triangle. And so the abuser will say, well, you know, your sister Frankie said that your brother Harold was this, that, and the other thing, and she said this about you. So the one that's controlling the entire conversation is the operator, which is the abuser. So they can, you know, then of course kids usually go, well, you tell Frankie to blah, 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 and you tell Harold to blah, 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 blah. So then the abuser can go back to Frankie and Harold and create whatever story they want. So that's how each kid ends up feeling like the other kids are all the golden children. Does that make sense?
It totally makes sense, because people just don't understand how, if I'm the one that gets ignored, then I would never think my mother would be going to my sisters and saying,
And it's a closed system. It's a completely closed system. So we have nothing to compare it against. So it's not until we grow up and get outside of the system and are looking inside at the system. And that's when we go, whoa, what the just happened? Because this is not even making sense. So the triangulation of the communication is what creates the drama It's what creates the power plays, and it's what creates the misinformation. So when we grow up and we get out of those situations, when somebody starts saying, well, so-and-so said such and such, you stop them cold. Uh-uh. Nope. Let's get, yep. Talk to the hand, you know, let's get them on the phone and let's see what they really said. And you watch them backpedal. Seriously. They'll just be like, oh, well, no, you know, but that's what you do. You have to call them on their bullshit. So when they start triangulating, you say, no, let's get the other person on the phone. And that will cut that stuff off quicker than you can say, Bob's your uncle.
Right. Because, but the triangulation and all of that is just smear campaigns against the others. Mm-hmm. It's just sort of this, you know, passive aggressive anger that is being fed like a fire to just like, oh, you don't hate them enough. Let me give you a little bad fake information and lie about them. And then you'll hate them.
Divide and conquer. That's what the parent does. Because if the kids actually got together and started talking, there would be a rebellion. There would. The kids would get together and go, Mom or Dad, you are a lying sack of shit. And we're not buying your bullshit anymore. And no, you can't control us because now we know what's going on. And that's why these toxic parents, so funny, I'm going to be talking about this on Sunday. That's why these toxic parents do the divide and conquer and keep the triangulation going so that they can control. It's all about power and control.
So why can't these three siblings find a way to become that nucleus of family? Why don't they join together? Are they so afraid that, you know, if they cross the line and I like you, then mommy's not going to like me?
Fear, obligation, and guilt fog. So they're fearful of the toxic parent. They feel obligated to stay loyal to them. So if the toxic parent has said, you better not like Johnny or you better not like Jenny, then they feel obligated to stay loyal to that parent. And then guilt. Oh my gosh, if we tell mom that she's sick, she's gonna get upset and start crying and do whatever. And it's our job to keep her happy or keep him happy, whoever the dysfunctional parent is. So it's fear, obligation, and guilt, fog.
I love that. Is that in your book?
No. Well, yes and no. But I'm writing another one, so it's going to be in the next one.
Awesome. So when we have these roles and they're clearly changing, because again, you're now the favorite, or, you know, I think I became the favorite only when I had my son. Mm-hmm. That's when, you know, all of the, you're a fuck up, you didn't go to college, you were a pothead, whatever they labeled me with. Right. When I had my son and my two sisters did not have anyone, I became the golden child for the first time in my life. And but that role didn't last long because the new shiny toy didn't matter anymore. It was just something, I think, for my mother to go and share with the world. I have a grandson. And I am such a shock jock. Okay. So at the time, my parents were living in Mexico, and I would send her pictures. At those days, you know, you'd go to CVS and get actual paper pictures, and I'd mail them to her. And I took a picture of his poop, because here she's like showing all her friends, oh, my grandson. And I took a picture of poop and I put it in and sent it to Mexico. Mm-hmm. And she opened it up at the lunch table with her friends, and there, look, my grandson. And then there's poop. I think I really went downhill from there, but they should have expected that. I'm a shock jock. I've always done things for their attention, mm-hmm. negative or not. But that took me off that pedestal quite quickly. Right. But how do these roles affect us, like, in our adulthood?
So it really fucks with a kid's head. It really does. Because if you've got a parent, now, my family was slightly different than yours. What they would do is my dad would rotate who was the golden child on a regular basis. And it would depend on who he was pissed off at that particular moment in time. He left more wills than, who was the guy? Howard Hughes. Seriously.
So my mother had 15 wills before she died.
Ding, 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 ding.
That's, I never knew.
What they do. This is part of the pathology, because they will get pissed off at a kid. So let's say the golden child is up here and doing everything that they want, but then suddenly the golden child finds their voice and says no and starts drawing boundaries. Well, now the narcissistic parent is going to be like, I'll show you, because they're very vindictive. They're horrifically vindictive. And so this messes with kids because, okay, let me finish the thought and then I'll go back to that. Sorry, so much information. Okay, so, all right. So they will rotate whoever is the golden child based on their mercurial mood at the time. So one kid will be the golden child. They find their voice. Oh, well, you're not the golden child. I'll show you. I'll write you out of the will. I'll destroy your property. I'll do whatever it is to her. Oh, your favorite teddy bear? I'll suddenly, whoa, did you go bye-bye?
I'm here.
Okay. Whoa, what did it happen? Okay, there we go. What was I saying? Dear God. Oh, I'll destroy your favorite teddy bear. You know, oh, accidentally threw it away. You know, things like that. They're just mean, vindictive POSs, if you want my personal opinion. So what this does to a kid is it gives them no sense of safety and no sense of boundaries. Because when we start drawing boundaries and our parent goes, I'm going to punish you for having boundaries, we learn really quickly, oh, I better not have boundaries. So that makes us people pleasers, which is why I love Ross Rosenberg, because it's like, yeah, all of us, you know, show me a target of abuse, boo, I'll show you a people pleaser. Because they've taught us by conditioning, remember the intermittent positive rewards, if you don't do what I want you to do, I'm going to punish you. I'm going to write you out of the will. I'm going to destroy your property. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. I'm going to smear you. I'm going to tell the family that you're a drug addict and this, that, and the other thing. I mean, they do that kind of thing. They're evil. They're just fucking evil. Does that make sense?
Oh, I get that.
Yeah. So what that does to a kid is it gives them no sense of boundaries. Now they're people pleasers. Now they're allowing everybody to walk over them. They have no sense of self-esteem. They have no sense of self. And it's damaging to every single kid in this triangle, because the ignored middle child never feels good enough because they're always ignored. The golden child sometimes turns into narcissist themselves, depending if they have stayed in that role for a very, very, very long time. The comedian goes on to try to become an entertainer and entertain people and or heal people. So the overriding thing is you either get... We do one of three things when we're kids. We either grow up and become champions for others that have been through what we've been through, or we become an abuser, or we just fucking lose our mind and go crazy. Those are your three options. That's really what it is. Does that make sense?
It makes so much sense, because I could fit each one of my sisters in those roles. And I did not know about narcissism or any of this until about 2.5 years ago. And so I am deer in the headlights. My mother had just passed. I don't think I would have been able to really learn a lot about this, but it started to explain not only the boyfriend that had just had me arrested that led, yeah, forgive him for cheating and you're going to jail. So that was how I started looking about it. But then it explained my entire divorce. I think they were sociopaths. It was far worse, but I never understood, why were they lying? Why were they saying these things about me? I never did that. Right. None of it made sense. And then I got into the family of origin. And that was just like, eureka, that explains everything.
Well, and what's going to help the kids the most is getting with a damn good therapist that understands domestic violence. They have got to understand personality disorders. And unfortunately, there is a shit ton of really bad therapists out there that wouldn't know a personality disorder if it walked up and fucked up. So, you know what I'm saying?
So, I do.
Yeah. So you got to get with a good therapist and you start working on inner child work. Catherine Taylor's book is phenomenal because she starts at pre-verbal and she works all the way up to adulthood.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people, it's so funny, they'll come to me and they'll be like, yeah, I've been having this series of bad relationships and my siblings are all messed up and this, that, and the other thing. And I don't understand why I keep doing it, but I had a really happy childhood. And I'm like, you know.
Just don't remember it. That's the thing. For me, I had such a cognitive dissonance about my childhood and a story. Like if you were to ask me 2.5 years ago, what was your childhood like? I lived in Westport, Connecticut. We had a house with 10 fireplaces. We lived on the ocean. Martha Stewart was our friend, so I learned to cook. All of this was just like this fake persona. Like, why did I want to kill myself 3 times?
Yeah,
what
exactly.
The fuck? I never even explored that until now. I was like, well, if I was so happy, why was I so unhappy?
Because that's the story the abusers told. And remember, abusers cannot deal with the truth. It's kind of like that Jack Nicholson, you want the truth, you can't handle the truth. They can't handle the truth. They can't. So they create this story and they lie and they tell the story that they are able to live with. So what I often will hear targets of abuse say was, well, you know, everybody fights, everybody screams at each other, everybody hits, everybody, and I'm like, no, or the bigger one is everybody lies. And I'm like, no, sweetheart, they don't. In healthy, normal families, there is none of this behavior going on. And what happens is that the abuser tries to normalize their bad behavior by telling the kids, oh, this is normal. Oh, this is normal to have mom and dad scream at each other. This is normal to have lying going on. This is normal to have hitting going on. This is normal to have, you know, whatever. And they try to say that everybody does that. And the truth is, no, not everybody does that.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's really hard as somebody who's growing up with this, that the world perceives your family as that golden story. Like, to the outside, we were middle-class family. Everything was fine. You know, let's go off on a yacht. But behind closed doors, they would leave us with a freaking freezer full of TV dinners for a month and leave a 14, 13, and 16-year-old. Bye. That's not normal parenting. And we would beat each other up and we would fight and we would yell and we would steal each other's things. And then there was the story. And when everyone came over, we had to dress up in our pretty little outfits and pretend that everything was fine.
Yeah, that's exactly what they do. And this messes with a kid's head because there's this absolute dysfunction going on and nobody will believe us. I can't tell you the number of times I tried to tell teachers, this is not normal. Something weird is going on. And all of the teachers were like, oh, your dad's a lawyer. Your dad's got all this money. It's fine. You know, da, da, da. They didn't want to hear it. They did not want to hear that there was abuse and dysfunction going on behind closed doors. And of course, my dad was not only borderline, but he had very narcissistic traits. I don't think he was full-blown narcissist, but he was damn close. Mainly because he did the suicidal gestures all the time. I mean, he didn't cut his wrist, but he did like playing chicken in the car and things like that. But he would present to the community as this upstanding Christian, going to church 4 times a week, blah, 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 blah. You know, donating all these, you know, songbooks to the choirs and this, that, and the other thing. So when I would speak up, nobody would believe me. Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
And like now, I don't think that would happen now because in the world of, you know, you just say one thing and the school system would be on it in a second. Yeah. But then you would probably get like, you would become the really bad child. You would be the one they hate. You caused all this pain and then you would be silenced.
Oh yeah, it's your fault that we're going through court. It's your fault that they're taking a look at us. You're a liar. You're dysfunctional. You're this. You identified scapegoat, identified patient. So that's something they did teach us in school. I will give my university that, is that they always told us that if parents come in with a kid and they're pointing the finger at the kid, you look right back at the parents because the parents made that child. So what's going on with the parents? So if the kid's got dysfunctional behavior, you got to take a look at what the parents are doing. Does that make sense?
Oh, totally. It totally makes sense. But can when siblings have been this torn apart, and this hatred for each other, they've been verbally abused and they do it to each other. So it's the parent that's leading the charge, but then creating like a little army. I felt like I was growing up in the Hunger Games.
Oh, yeah.
We were trained to hate and there was competition for love.
Oh,
if you hadn't do this, you had to keep up with your sisters and reinvent yourself over and over just to get a little tiny bit of love.
Right, because it's not unconditional. It was completely conditional. Are you making the parent look good? If you made the parent look good, oh, I will give you love. if you didn't make the parent look good, like let's say you got average grades, you know, A's and B's or even C's, they could care less. But if you were on the honor roll, oh, yeah, my son, my daughter, my this, my that, my, me. It's all about them. Yeah. So that's for when kids grow up like that and there's this learned hatred, it takes a lot of undoing the damage. So I've got four sisters and a brother, and the brother and I do not talk. We just do not. And it's never going to be repaired.
Wow.
And that's just the way it is, because the only way to fix this is to get with a goddamn good therapist, family therapy, who understands narcissistic abuse, who understands narcissistic abuse survivor syndrome, right? Which they're actually thinking about putting into the DSM-6, I believe. And honestly, I want everybody out here to contact the APA and the ACA and tell them, do not get rid of the personality disorders, because there's a whole bunch of people out there that are like, we don't want to label anybody. Yeah, go fuck yourself. Anyway. So we need to get narcissistic abuse survivor syndrome in there, because the behavior of every narcissistically abused child is exactly the same. Exactly the same. And it's CPTSD. So some relationships are going to be unable to be repaired, because if that child has got those strong traits or is full-blown narcissist themselves, you never go to therapy with a narcissist. And number two, even if you got them into therapy, as soon as the therapist turned the spotlight onto them and said, okay, what's your part of this? They'd be like, you're incompetent. You don't know what you're doing. You're dangerous. I'm out of here. Boom. That's what they do.
I know. That's what my ex-husband did.
Exactly. And even if you do go to therapy with a narcissist, it's dangerous, because they will take whatever is said in therapy, twist it, and then throw it back at you. Mm-hmm. And make it all your fault. So that's why I'm saying, if you know a sibling is in fact NPD, do not, for your own comfort and safety, do not do therapy with them. Write them off. Be done.
But that's hard. It's hard.
I know, but here's the deal. Here's the question to ask yourself. If you were not related to these fucking assholes, would you have anything to do with them?
Good point.
Ding. See where I'm going with that?
Totally.
If you would not have anything to do with them, then be done. Be done. It's not your job to fix them. And because we are all codependent coming out of one of these really messed up family relationships, we want to fix them. We can see how it can be better. I mean, honestly, we can sit there and go, oh, this could be so good if only, if this person would get help, if this person could open up, if this person, if. Okay, well, if is not reality.
Mm-hmm.
What is? What is? Okay, well, let's take a look at the person's behaviors. Okay, they're refusing to go to therapy. When they do go to therapy, they call the therapist incompetent and storm out. They don't take responsibility for a damn thing they've ever done. They continue to gaslight, lie, manipulate, rewrite history, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All right. If that person is not willing to work on themselves, you don't have a chance of an ice cube in hell of repairing that relationship, because there's no there. Does that make sense?
It does.
So if you were related to these people, would you have anything to do with them? If the answer is no, act accordingly.
Act accordingly and stick to it.
Yeah.
Because
they have good boundaries. And when you're building your boundaries with your other siblings, make sure that, or rebuilding the relationship with your other siblings, make sure your boundaries are really tight in place, so that if any of them start pulling the gaslighting, the lying, the manipulation, blah, 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 you can do one of two things. You can either go, you know what? I really am done with this person. I'm not interested. Goodbye. Or you can call them on it if they're just traits of, okay? And if they're willing to go to therapy, okay, great. You guys can work on it, but have good boundaries in place. It's not your job to fix them. It's not your job to fix them. I'm going to say that one more time. It's not your fucking job to fix them. You did not break them. You cannot fix them. Only they can fix themselves. And they have to be willing to. And if they're not, then, you know, good luck. God bless. Adios.
Yeah. I have one last section I want to ask you about. Both my sisters and my mother were diagnosed with borderline personality. You know, major depression, all kinds of other things that got slammed on top of them over the years. But the difference between someone with a borderline personality and a narcissist? Is it so close that, you know, that they are, I mean, by default, if they're this, are they that? I don't know.
Here's the deal. There are criteria for each one. On one end, you have traits of. So with a borderline, it can be maybe some emotional dysregulation, maybe some self-harming, that kind of thing. So that's on the traits end. That's only two of the nine criteria, okay? If they're down here, you can work with them. You can help them because there's enough there to work with. Once somebody starts sliding down the malignancy spectrum, okay, and they reach the point where they are actively smearing somebody, harming somebody, enjoying it, drama, you know, vicious. So, okay, back up. So much information. Okay. So, all right. Borderline personality disorder is called borderline because it has traits of all 10 major personality disorders and it borders on psychotic thinking. Okay. Mm-hmm. The thinking is cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. So when they go into one of their rages, they're not even making sense in their own head, let alone coming out of their mouth. That's the psychotic thinking. So when somebody has slid down the malignancy line and they're now at full-blown malignant, you cannot help them at all. And the traits of all of the personality disorders start overlapping. So if they're down at the malignant end, they're going to have really strong traits of narcissism, okay? Because remember, it's got all 10 traits of every mm-hmm. single personality disorder. Narcissism is one of them. The other thing of it is that when somebody becomes a dark triad, and that means that they've slid all the way down to the end of the malignant spectrum. Dark triad is narcissism, Machiavellianism, which is control freak, and psychopath. Yay!
That's a really good triangle. Sign me up.
Yeah, let's not. So it's when somebody has started sliding down towards malignancy, they are going to have strong traits of all of the, oh, my dog's going to bark.
Maybe not. Is it okay. Scotty?
It's Scotty, yes. they're going to have strong traits of the other personality disorders, but mostly the narcissism is going to come out. Now, you can be comorbid. You can have both of them. And if you are interested in looking up what the criteria is, you can look up on the Mayo Clinic, what is the criteria for borderline? What is the criteria for narcissism?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, and this is what bothers me about my profession is for years and years and years, and it's because of Freud, it was this big secret. It's just, let's keep everything a secret. We're not, you know, you're a blank screen therapist. You're not going to talk to the client. You're going to be a blank screen. Let them just blabble on for 25 years. Yeah, that worked so well with, what's his name? Oh, the actor that slept with his daughter and ended up marrying her. What the hell?
Woody Allen.
Yeah, that works so well, right? So, because he did Freudian therapy for, you know, 30 years. And I'm like, yeah, don't get me started. Anyway, so it was all this big secret. And we weren't supposed to tell the client what their diagnosis was. And we weren't supposed to tell the client, you know, the process. And I think that's bullshit. You need to tell, knowledge is power, man. So you need to tell your person what you're working on and why. Because otherwise, it's not going to work. Does that make sense?
Right. And I think in these days too, all of this can be looked up. You know, I don't know that back in the 70s that there was as much. There was a Freud book. There was a Dr. Spock book on raising your parents. There wasn't a lot of this other stuff out there. And it was kept in secret.
Yeah, the DSM, exactly. The DSM was always, you know, shrouded in secrecy. And it's like this, oh, well, this is a physician's book. Because they were trying to do a medical model for psychology, which doesn't really work because it's not a physical issue. I mean, if there is a chemical imbalance, yes, that is a physical issue, but it's not like you could go in there and do surgery and fix it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I'm a huge fan of educating the shit out of everybody. Go look up the DSM-5. Go look up the criteria for borderline. Go look up the criteria for narcissistic personality disorder. Read every book you can get your hands on. Educate the hell out of yourself, because for two reasons. One, you're going to understand yourself better if you grew up in that kind of dynamic. And two, when you see another one coming towards you, you're going to be able to recognize them a mile away and sidestep. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Sorry, I just got off on a tangent. Go ahead. Well,
that was a really good tangent. I really liked it. It's really important. I actually have a book. I'm a big thrift store book buyer. So on Saturdays, I just go down there because they're a dollar. And I don't care what the thing is. Yeah, it's a thousand ways to, you know, have a good marriage. Well, I bet there's shit I got to learn in there. And it's a dollar. So it's like I just keep buying these. And one day I went and I had the DSM-5 companion book that gives the doctors who buy that actual examples. Mm-hmm. Of this is a narcissistic kind of traits, and it's like 2 or 3 pages. It was so fascinating to watch and look at and read. Yeah. That's this, and it pissed me off a little bit too, because it was only a small book, but it was, this is what they're telling therapists and doctors. This is the one freaking example. You're talking about like 100 characters. You can't sum this shit up like that.
Exactly. And that's why I am so livid that the universities are turning out therapists without going into domestic violence, without going into personality disorders. If you're gonna work with domestic violence, every single perpetrator without fail is going to be a cluster B personality disorder. There's cluster A, cluster B, and cluster C. They're going to be in the cluster Bs. They're going to be narcissistic, histrionic, or borderline, one of those three. And they don't teach what this is, and they don't give examples of what it is. So I remember when I was a young, you know, clinician, the first time I was confronted with a narcissist, I was like, the fuck? Like, I didn't know how to handle it. Now I do. But that's because I went out and got my own training and was like, okay, what is this? And case studies are hugely important, which is why my last book, the Cha-Cha book that I did, is nothing but case studies. Because it's like, this is what it sounds like, guys. This is how they talk. This is what they do. You know, it's like, you need to know. And I cover borderlines and I cover narcissism, because there's different types. So in borderlines, there's the quiet ones down at the lower end of the spectrum. These are the ones that usually do self-harm, okay?
Okay.
They're emotionally deregulated. They don't know how to cope. They really don't want to hurt other people, so that's why they hurt themselves, kind of thing. Okay. Then you move up to the hermits. The hermits are more like the martyrs. The hermits are more like the, you know, I'm going to isolate myself because nobody loves me and I'm a martyr, you know, that whole thing. Poor me, woe is me. Then you move up to the witch and the queen. The witch and the queen are the worst kind.
Are they together or?
They, down the malignancy line, they're like at the end.
Okay.
So the queen is the control freak, wants to control, 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 control. The witch is a fucking sadistic motherfucker and they enjoy inflicting pain.
I married that.
I'm so sorry.
My ex-mother-in-law was the queen fucking bitch from hell. Mm-hmm. Controlling and hurting her children. So sad.
Oh yeah. And then with the narcissist, you have different types. So you have the grandiose type, the one that's all, oh, I'm the best at everything. Look at how great I am. I'm the best this, I'm the best that, I'm the best, I'm the best, I'm the best, I'm the best. It's like, well, I'm sorry, if you're the best, you don't have to say it. That's really,
we know that, but they don't know that. They don't even see that. They have to convince people because they are building that narrative. They are building that story.
They've got a brittle id. They've got a brittle sense of who they are. So that's why they constantly, constantly, constantly need outside approval all the fucking time. And it gets exhausting. So there's the grandiose narcissist. Then you have the covert narcissist. These are the dangerous ones because they sit there and they go, I'm such a good person. Look at me and da, 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 da. But behind the scenes, they are trash talking everybody. They are dripping poison. Yes. Into the ear of the target. Oh, well, you know, your mother doesn't really like you. Oh, well, you know, your best friend is really wanting to sleep with you. Oh, well, you know, you're da, 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 da. You know, they just lie. They fucking lie. All the fucking time. Oh, well, you know, not, you know, everybody lies. That's their shtick, is the covert stuff. But in public, they're this innocent, you know, whatever. They also
tend charming. That's like the ultimate charm, is those coverts are just known for how everyone loves them.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, so there's the covert. And then you have the communal narcissist. And the communal narcissist is the one who is pious, who is a community master, who is out, you know, think Jim Jones, think, who was the other cult leader that got everybody to kill themselves? The comet guy. Can't think of his name. Anyway.
The Kool-Aid guy?
Well, the Kool-Aid guy was Jim Jones.
Oh, okay.
The Kool-Aid guy was the one that was like, the comet's coming and we're all going to go up into the comet, but we have to cut off our genitals and then put on Nikes and then we'll go. Yeah, crazy. So they're communal. So what they do is they do, being in a narcissistic relationship, whether it's with a sibling, a romantic partner, a boss, or anything, is seriously like being in a cult, because they all do the same repetitive behavior to get us to drink their Kool-Aid. Does that make sense?
Totally.
Yeah. So there's different types of narcissists. There's different types of borderlines, and there's different types of abuse. So that's why I did case studies for each one, so that you could see, what is this like, you know?
So. Well, I want everybody to go get your book, because it's totally going to help them. And I think that's one of the things that helps people by listening to other people's stories on YouTube.
Yes.
It's just like, I didn't even think about that. And yeah. When I have my local, you know, in-person support groups, everybody's just like, they hear it and they're like, oh, I didn't think of that as abuse. Oh my God. Like these light bulbs are just popping around their heads.
Yeah. Well, it's because we don't think of it as abuse. So it's just like when we finally get out of the brainwashing, the gaslighting, the rewriting history, and we're able to step outside and see what normal is, relatively speaking, normal, you know what I mean? But we see how other people live and they're not screaming at each other and they're not lying and they're not doing all of this drama and stuff. Then it's like, oh shit, my entire life was a fucking lie. Whoa. I mean, that's.
And then they want to go out on a date a week later. You're like,
nope.
Whoa, you got some shit to learn, girl.
Yeah, you stay single. And this is without fail. Every single survivor of abuse, whether it's sibling, parental, job, whatever, they will. Because there's the codependency going on, and somehow they got groomed by the original wound, right? So the original caregiver that set us up for this, they will say something along the lines of, oh my God, I can't be alone. Oh my God, I have to be with somebody. Oh my God, I can't. Well, and the reason being is, it's the internal dialogue. If our internal critic is just sitting there going, Richie calls it the internal critic, I call it the internal dialogue. So healthy, everybody has internal dialogue. Everybody talks to themselves. If, however, well, hold on. Let me tell you what healthy is. Healthy is a cheerleader. It's like, good job. Go you. I love you. Oops, you fucked up. Okay, make amends. Okay, you good. You made amends. Forgive yourself. Move on. It's kind. It's gentle. It's nice. It's helpful. If, however, we had caregivers that were neglectful, abusive, alcoholic, addict, whatever, this thing is going to be your worst fucking enemy. And it's going to be something along the lines of, oh my God, you're so stupid. Why did you say that? You're not good enough. Da, 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 da. What if, not good enough, not good enough. What if, not good enough. It's going to drive you crazy. So the biggest thing for us as survivors is to tune into this voice and master it. So if it says anything less than, I love you, good job. Okay. Your brother or sister doesn't like you. That's their problem, not yours. Especially if you've offered therapy and they said, no, you know what? I am good enough. Why? Because I say so. I say so.
I like the little thing. Now, when I hear these voices, I get them all day long. And I am now in this process of healing. I am answering myself back. I am having a complete dialogue. And whether my self says, oh God, you really got to start walking, girl. You're, you know, and it's this voice. And then there's this other one, but like, look what you've been through and it's okay. Take it slow. Don't judge yourself. Don't hurt yourself. But you're so fat. You know, you just go back and forth.
So the thing of it is that we get all of this crap that's shoved into our head from our caregivers, from mom and dad, right? Mm-hmm. So if it says anything less than, I love you, good job, keep going. Let's say it pops up and goes, oh my God, you're so fat. Okay. Thank you for your input. Shut the fuck up. Why? I say so. I am the boss of you. You are not the boss of me. I am beautiful right here, right now. Why, fucker? Because I say so.
That's beating up yourself.
Well, it's beating up your bully, because this voice is not yours. This voice was the voice of your mom, your dad, your caregiver. Somebody told us that we weren't good enough. Somebody told us we were too fat, too thin, too loud, too soft, to this, to that. Fuck that shit. Like, seriously. And the other thing that I find helpful too is, besides confronting it and doing the I say so, like literally, like taking your power back because I say so. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. If you hit with the what ifs, thank you for your input. Shut the fuck up. Why? Because I say so. I refuse to live in what if, in a future that has not and probably will not happen. I will live in what is right here, right now. And that's our challenge, is to shut this voice down and replace it with the positive voice, the kind voice. We need to reparent ourselves. This is really what it's all about. Mm-hmm. And parent, if a bully comes up, is going to go, hell no, bitch, you are not bullying my child.
Right.
Why? Because I fucking say so. Do you see where I'm going with that?
Oh, totally.
So you reparent yourself. This is why the inner child work is so vitally important, especially if we've got siblings that have the same issue. If they're willing to work with a therapist, then you guys all need to be working the self-esteem workbook, number one, and the Inner Child Workbook by Katherine Taylor, number two. And there has to be a willingness to confront the original wound. And for some people, that is just too much. They can't. They can't and they won't. So yes. if they can't and they won't, mm-hmm. that's when you have to go, okay, if I were not related to this person, would I give a shit? Nope. Okay. Done.
Now, have you ever heard of Susan Anderson's Outer Child Workbook and book? Oh my God. I have read so many on the inner child, and then there was this on Audible and I said, give it to me. It is so powerful. It takes the inner child work to a different level. So I really encourage you to just grab a hold of that thing.
Susan Anderson. Okay, cool.
Susan Anderson. Yeah.
What's happening is with kids that have been raised in this kind of toxic environment, they will find themselves on an automatic, like knee-jerk reaction behavior. And they're sitting there going, but I want to lose weight and I want to do this, but yet I find myself continuing to get heavier and heavier and heavier, and I don't understand it. And I'm like, how old are you when you are putting the food in your mouth, and what are you feeling? And then it turns out, shit, I'm 3 and I'm trying to comfort myself. So this is why the inner work and the outer work is important, because it's important to love that little inner child. Like, just mm-hmm. love them and hug them and kiss them and call them George and remind them of how amazing they are, and that they are survivors, and that they are stronger than they know. And then you ask that inner child, what do you need? What do you need from me? How can I help you? And 9 times out of 10, that little guy or gal is going to look up at you and say, I just want to be protected. In which case, you turn into Xena, warrior princess, and you go, little one, I got this.
And that's the basis of her book, is that we have that inner child, that we have the adult child, and then we have the outer child, and they fight each other. Mm-hmm. And so it's sort of a 3-personality thing going on there, and it just explained everything about my life, in addition to just every single one of them. Every book I read, I just go, that's me.
Yep, exactly. Well, it's the same stuff no matter where in the world it is. I mean, it's like you were saying earlier, it's like I get people commenting from all over the world, like Pakistan and China and, you know, every place. And it's like, it's all the same. It's like, oh my God, you just described my abuser. Oh my God, you just described my parent. Oh my God, you just described my sibling. And I'm like, that's because the pathology is the same no matter where in the world it is. And the survivor's behavior is the same no matter where in the world it is.
Mm-hmm.
So
we need to just like wrap this up, but I would love for you to just share one last piece of information. If someone is struggling with separating from a sibling or making that choice to walk away, obviously it is for their own good and it feels icky. I look at it, I don't speak to either of my sisters, and one sister's birthday was yesterday and it hurt to not call her. Right. It was like, ugh. But I listened to that voice, said, Tracy, if you open the door, it's just a happy birthday, but look what else can happen. And I talked myself out of it. But how does someone get strong enough to do that, to walk away?
Self-esteem. It's everything boils down to self-esteem. If you were not related to this person, would you put up with the behavior that they're throwing at you? The answer is no, 9 times out of 10, actually 10 times out of 10. You know what I'm saying? It's all boils down to what are your deal breakers? And this goes for anybody. This goes for whether they are your boss, your lover, your parent, your sister or brother, you know, anybody. What are your deal breakers? What will you absolutely not put up with? And when somebody comes out of abuse, what I often find is they look at me and they go, and I'm like, okay, we've got to work on self-esteem. Because people who have self-esteem have good boundaries, and people who have self-esteem have got deal breakers. It's like, I will not put up with lying. You lie to me, we're fucking done, period. You know, you behave in any way that is harmful, hurtful, you know, disrespectful, we're done. Do you see where I'm going? It's like there's deal breakers. And so it's really important. I love the Self-Esteem Workbook by Schiraldi.
I just bought that today.
Because he covers everything. And everybody's like, oh, well, but I've got great self-esteem at work. And I'm like, no, you don't understand. Self-esteem is physical, mental, emotional, spiritual. It's the whole ball of wax. You can have great self-esteem in, say, for example, the physical department, but terrible self-esteem in the emotional department. Mm-hmm. So that's why you got to work on everything. And mirror work. I love mirror work. So you look in the mirror, you say, hi, good to see you. Have a wonderful day. I give you permission to get rid of toxic people, no matter who they are, period. And that's hard for us as codependents because we want to fix, we want to heal, we want to make sure everybody's okay. And we can't. You know, there are just some people that we cannot help because they do not want the help. If they want the help, huzzah, go for it. But if they don't, you can't.
Right.
That makes sense.
That makes a lot of sense. You are a brilliant, brilliant, sweet, wonderful lady. And I am so honored that you have come to my channel. And I am really grateful that you have, I'm going to talk about your books and share that at the beginning when we do our introduction and let everybody know how to reach out to you as well.
Cool. Thank you so much. Thank you for inviting me. This was fun.
You're welcome. Thank you. Wow, wasn't that a great conversation? She is so cool, and I love that she swears because we know I do. And so I hope that you got something out of this. If you haven't subscribed to my channel, please do. If you haven't visited my website, I have a website called Narcissist Abuse Support, and we have all kinds of resources for you to get started, to learn about the red flags, to learn about how to move on. And no matter where you are in this recovery process, we've got some kind of solution there for you. So I look forward to seeing you soon. And this is Tracy. That's all I got. Thanks.